Grundy. Was that spooky?
That was... Sure.
But you followed up with your witch's cackle.
I think my witch's cackle is probably spookier.
Yeah,
that's
pretty spooky. Good evening. So, welcome to a very spooky OK podcast. Halloween is just around the corner.
We're excited. Lots of candy.
Carved a pumpkin with my beautiful little daughter.
What is Alex going to be this year?
She has repeatedly told me she's going to be a purple cat.
Why not?
Yeah, and so we got some purple pajamas, and we're going to paint her face, and we got her little cat ears, which she's been wearing nonstop since we got them.
Are you guys dressing up too?
I'm dressing up as a father. That's, yeah.
That'll be a first look for you.
I was, yeah, conned into trying to dress up, but I'm too old.
Yeah. So are you going to take Alex trick-or-treating, or are you going to take her to, you know, the mall? Where are you going?
Straight up trick-or-treating. This is I know there's been a decline in trick-or-treating in the years. We live right by Cary Place, so it's like Oklahoma City's hotspot for actual door-to-door, old-school trick-or-treating. Kids with
pillowcases.
Pillowcases full of candy.
Their little jack-o'-lantern plastic.
Yeah, that's what we're getting. Actually, Alex has got a little ghost thing. Oh,
okay. So what are your favorite memories of Halloween growing up? Because it is different. It's different now. Halloween was a huge thing when I was a kid.
Yeah,
and I think it'd be like a whole gang of us out on the streets, all dressed up and
running from house to house.
Yep.
I can't even remember. I think I went as a hobo. That was like an outfit
a
one
hobo?
Year, and then a punk rocker one year.
Yeah. And like, did you wear a trash bag? That seemed to be like the punk rocker outfit for.
Yeah. I did my hair purple and spiky.
Yeah, we always did homemade costumes as well.
I remember my brother went as a vampire and had one of those creepy masks. This was like, I had to be really young. So this was early 80s. And he left the box of that in my room.
That scare you?
Scared me to death. So we were thinking we've got to do a spooky episode. So what's spooky in Oklahoma City?
Haunted houses.
Exactly. So why not go to the source, the original first creepy old mansion? Actually, it's not creepy. It's totally beautiful. But the first mansion in Oklahoma City is supposedly haunted.
It is. So that's the Overholser Mansion.
It's one of those things that you've probably driven by or it's been on your list. You absolutely must go see this.
Yeah.
It is a gem. It's like somebody stepped out of the house in 1910 and just never came back.
Just locked the door. Yeah, it's beautiful. Everything there is amazing. Just even going to look at the architecture and all the little details inside the house and the light fixtures, the stained glass windows. It's amazing.
And, you know, it's haunted.
Yeah.
So we talked with David Pettyjohn from Preservation, Oklahoma. And their offices are actually in the carriage house there. So we talked to him about the history and some of the spooky stories that he's had go on. So
we do. And then later on, we talked to Tanya McCoy.
From the Oklahoma Paranormal Association.
Yeah.
She's done some actual paranormal investigation.
And they're going to do a special tour this Saturday at the Overholser Mansion. So if you're in town, you can look up the Oklahoma Paranormal Association, the Oklahoma Paranormal Association Facebook page, and see what kind of tours they have going on. There's probably more things even going throughout the state, not just Oklahoma City.
And those investigations are actually a great fundraiser for them. So check it out. And let's get David in here and talk about the history of the house and hear some of his creepy stories.
Sounds good. We have David Pettyjohn here with us today, and he is with the Preservation Oklahoma with the Overholser Mansion. So tell us a little bit about the Overholser Mansion, like when it was built and how many rooms, just kind of a general overview.
Great. Well, first of all, thank you for having me. It's a wonderful opportunity to always come and talk about the Overholser Mansion. The Overholser Mansion is considered to be Oklahoma City's first mansion. It was built in 1903. By Henry Overholser and his wife, Anna. Henry is considered to be the father of Oklahoma City. During his time, he was affectionately referred to as Uncle Henry. He did a lot for the city. He was here on Land Run Day, April 22nd, 1889, as your listeners know. Mr. Overholser came from Ohio, and he was already wealthy when he arrived. He was a businessman, And he got his money through mining and real estate and lumber and prefabricated buildings. So he viewed this as an opportunity to really make more money. So he, like I said, he was here on Land Run Day. And one of the neat things that he did was he erected the very first two-story buildings in Oklahoma City. And it was the Overholzer Block. It was located just west of Robinson on Grand Avenue at the time, which is now Sheridan Avenue. In the 1960s, the people there thought Grand didn't sound so grand anymore because of kind of what was going on. So they were going to change the name to Sheraton after the hotel. But the other businesses thought that wasn't very fair to them. So they settled on Sheridan. And that's why it's known that way today. He went about really trying to spur business. He went about trying to encourage additional railroads to come to Oklahoma City. As we all know, Oklahoma City was not the territorial capital nor our first state capital. That was Guthrie. So another thing that Mr. Overholzer did was he invested a lot of his own money in the development. In the 1890s, it was a really difficult time in Oklahoma City. There was, and in the nation, there was an economic recession that took place. So we always hear the story how the night of April 22nd, there were 10,000 tents. But not everybody stayed. So as the city was trying to grow, there were some people who left. Well, Mr. Overholzer, he also believed in the city. So he invested a lot of his time, a lot of his effort. He was a county commissioner. He tried to run for mayor on a few occasions. He never won, but his son did. His son is mayor of Oklahoma City, actually, when Mr. Overholzer dies, Ed Overholzer. Mr. Overholzer was actually his first wife, you know, divorced from his first wife when he arrived. He was 43 divorced. Years old, yeah, and had two grown children, including Ed and the daughter. Her name is Queenie. When Mrs. Overholzer arrives, she actually arrives on June the 3rd of 1889 with her father, Samuel. He is a lawyer from Arkansas, and he becomes the first treasurer of Oklahoma Territory when that's formed in 1890. She was 18 years old. So shortly after her arrival, they meet and they're married in October of 1889. So it's kind of the first big wedding in Oklahoma City society. And you kind of go back and, you know, like, oh, Mr. Overholzer captured the beautiful young Anna Ione Murphy. That's really kind of Mr. Overholzer. And I think what's kind of interesting is that his legacy, to some extent, has been forgotten, I think, you know, for everything that he did. For Oklahoma City, there's not a street named after him.
Right.
The lake is actually named after his son as well as him. Ed Overholzer, like I said, is mayor between 1915. He has to step down on Christmas Eve 1918 due to health reasons. We're thinking it might have something to do with the Spanish flu. We're still trying to look at that. And in honor of his work, Mr. Ed Overholzer, the city council voted to rename the new water work facility out in western Oklahoma City in his honor as well as his father's. We'll get calls from people like, we're driving around the lake. Where's the mansion?
And yeah.
And so we say,
kind of far.
It is. It is. Yeah.
He must have really loved the city. He could have come in, invested, and moved on.
Right. No, he really did. And that's why I said he was kind of known as Uncle Henry. He was also instrumental in getting Oklahoma City, you know, to become the state capital. I won't go into all the details here because I'm afraid I might mess up a few things, but he was a huge proponent of Oklahoma City being the capital city.
Yeah, so it really is surprising that we don't have, like, at least a neighborhood or a street or something named after
him. Right, you know, we have some elementary schools. But one of the things that I noticed, I love the State Fair. Go there every year. There's not a statue to Mr. Overholzer there, and he really made the State Fair incredibly successful. I believe he was the second president of the board and really put a lot of effort into getting that that event going. So that's another thing that you notice when you work at the Overholzer Mansion.
So it sounds kind of like we need to start a fan club for Mr. Overholzer.
That's right.
See if we can.
You know, where is he buried?
He's in Fairlawn, up on Chartel. Yeah. Okay. The entire Overholzer family is buried there. They had a son named Henry Samuel Overholzer Jr. who died in 1891. He was 8 months old when he passed away. The only story we have is that he got into a box of chocolates and he passed away that evening. So we're thinking some sort of allergic reaction, possibly. So they have one surviving child, a daughter named Henry Ione. She was born in 1905, and she was a little bit of a spitfire, I've been told. She eventually became a flapper And her mother was raised very Victorian and Edwardian, and they kind of didn't get along very well. So as I said, Mr. Overholser passed away in 1915, so he's buried at Fairlawn. Mrs. Overholser dies in 1940. She never remarries. Henry Ione, by that time, is married to David J. Perry, who becomes really instrumental. You know, really, he's an aviator, worked with Senator Monroney from Oklahoma. She passes away in 1959 from cancer, and they don't have any children. So at that time, the home is left to David J. Perry, who's also, he ends up dying in the early 90s there. So all five of them are buried in Fairlawn Cemetery. So the house was actually the first one built in Classen's Highland Park addition, otherwise known now as Heritage Hills. They bought the first three lots in 1901, and when they decided to build out there, everybody thought they were a little crazy, because at that time it was out in the country.
So just out in the middle of nowhere.
Out in the middle of nowhere.
In the boonies back then.
Yeah, and when visitors come to the mansion, we have some photos from that time, and they're kind of amazed that, you know, how much has developed over time. But part of that had to do with Mr. Overholser, actually. One of the things that he did, he liked to encourage his peers to outdo him. So the home was designed by an architectural firm in London. It took about 2 years to build. It is 12,000 square feet, and it has a 3,000 square foot carriage house. It's a chateau-esque style home. There are, going through and counting the rooms, there were three bathrooms originally. One of them is taken out. We have two now, and we have about 10 to 12 rooms, including the kitchen. So, and we do have a basement, about a half basement as well. And visitors always ask if they can go down there. So
you said it's like a chateau-esque style. Was that kind of weird, since during that time period, it was like mission and craftsman style?
Absolutely, it was. And it still stands out today. That's kind of one of the unique characteristics about the home. There is a photo that we have in our archives, and we're still trying to locate it, of a similarly designed house in England. And we're kind of have this working hypothesis that Mrs. Overholser had visited it at one time and wanted a similarly designed home here in Oklahoma City. It cost about $40,000 at the time. Very ornate. One of the great things about where it was built was people could watch it, you know, as it kind of went up. Yeah. So you had the downtown area, which was just a few miles south, but you saw it. E.K. Gaylord, you know, very familiar. He told the story as a child, he watched it being constructed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it was kind of cool.
So there's different, I mean, it's a lot of like international influence with it,
right?
So what, like, tell us about like specific, I think I read that the windows are from France, or
they one of the major aspects of the home is the interior artwork. We have canvas colored walls, and the Overholsers actually brought in an artist from England who lived there for 18 months and hand drew all of the artwork. Roses were Mrs. Overholser's favorite. So you see roses all throughout the house, including in the carpet. They imported wood from Belgium that's still there. The chandeliers were imported from Italy. A lot of internet. And remember, it's 1903, so...
Yeah.
Just transporting these items.
Exactly.
So it's like really extravagant.
It was. In the Daily Oklahoman, They wrote a story about it, actually. The very first event, kind of social event that took place in the mansion, took place in February of 1904. And it was a meeting of the Chafing Dish Club. I don't know if you're familiar with that group. The Chafing Dish was kind of new technology in the 1890s. And, you know, listeners are familiar with the Chafing Dish. If you go to a buffet, it's just a silver container and it's kept warm. Well, in 1899, there was a group of women, society women, who decided to form a club. And they called it the Chafing Dish Club, and they would meet at each other's homes, and they would have a meal served out of a chafing dish, of course, and play whist or bridge. Well, in February of 1904, Mrs. Overholser held a meeting there. And what's remarkable is they wrote about it in the society pages. And immediately after that event, the editor described the home as a sermon on beauty and describes the carpet and other aspects that you can still see here today. So at the time, it was very well renowned.
What is a carriage house exactly? I mean, I'm assuming Carriage House.
Carriage House, actually, we affectionately refer to it as the barn of the Overholser Mansion, but it's a separate structure. And at the time, it's where they kept their carriage and horses. So we actually have some of the original horse gates. We had the second floor was the hayloft. So there's actually holes in the ceiling where they would drop the hay down, and we have some of the original feeders. One of the neat things is one of the windowsills still has the markings where the horses gnawed on it.
Oh, wow.
So it's actually pretty cool. But we get that question a lot. The tours always start in the carriage house. And the second floor besides the hayloft was the home of those who worked for Mr. and Mrs. Overholser. And that's my office now. It was updated in the 70s. Where's the carriage house? What's a carriage house? And so really it's just kind of garage.
Yeah,
it's kind of what it is.
So you mentioned people that worked for them. So I'm guessing there were kind of servant style people.
They did.
How many would they have?
It varied over time. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I've enjoyed doing is kind of going through census records and kind of finding out who lived there. And we'll talk about them when we get to the scary stories. But usually they had a couple. You know, one of the families that I have got the most research on was a married couple. And Y.D. and Geneva Houston worked for Mrs. Overholser in the 30s. Mrs. Overholser dies in 1940. He was the gardener as well as the chauffeur, and she was the maid and the cook. And one of the things, kind of looking back on that time, is Oklahoma City was pretty restricted. So anyone who was not Caucasian cannot live in the main house. So a lot of these carriage houses, you know, that's where the servants lived. And they were, you know, primarily African-American. Then they had a 23-year-old named Gio Skolik, who came over from Europe. And he was in 1910 census. So, but when Mrs. Overholser died in 1940, she left $5,000 to Y.D. and Geneva Houston.
Nice.
So
yeah.
I'm still trying to find out what happened to him after that.
Yeah, that'd be really interesting. We should try to look that up in the library or something.
Well, let's get to the spooky stories. The tales of kind of ghosts or hauntings. Is it something that was going on when the family was still living there?
I don't believe so, no. And one of the things that's really unique about the Overholser Mansion is only home to four people. And no more than three at one time. So Mr. Overholser dies in the house in 1915. He suffered a stroke and he was not able to leave at that time. So he passes away in the home, and there's a place on the second floor where he supposedly is, you know, passed away. And but really, I know that the stories have been there for quite some time. People seeing images in the windows as they walk by. I personally have experienced very many interesting things.
So what's the most, give me your...
Yeah, like what? What's the...
Well, I would say a couple. I've only seen something one time, and I was giving my in-laws a tour of the mansion, and I was in the library. And I was kind of describing the home and everything. And out of the corner of my right eye, I see a small child just kind of running. And I thought it was my nephew, who was about 4 years old at the time. And, you know, I kind of go out of my way. And then I look over and my brother-in-law is holding my nephew this entire time. So it just kind of, it could not have been him. Usually the most normal things are hearing footsteps come up the stairs when I'm at work,
and
you know, alone in the carriage
there,
house and nobody's there. Hearing voices downstairs, nothing, you know, one of the great, nothing has really scared me. I will say that, you know, it was their home first. But you know, they're pretty nice.
So are there any like, I don't know, fabled people or events that happened or that were
right.
These stories would kind of.
Not necessarily. It's usually the owners. You know, we actually have a ghost hunting tours that take place. Mm-hmm. And our first one is this Saturday, and then we're doing another one on the 28th. But it's actually set up right now for those tours. So we work with Oklahoma Paranormal Association, and they bring their equipment. I didn't know this stuff existed until they kind of came. But it's special equipment that can pick up voices, images, and back to the servant story. Remember me telling you about Gio, you know, Skolik. So they also do readings in the carriage house because, you know, people live there. And this was a year ago, and they took photos, and it was all dark. And they were able to capture an image at the top of the stairs. And it was a young man. And they would ask and say, what's your name? What's your name? You know, are you here? He's like, Joe. Okay, Joe Skolik. You know, as I went back and looked, in his 20s, you know, right outside the door to my office, which used to be his house. That was kind of unnerving. I know that up on the third floor is really the most active. And one of the things that we think the reason why is because those of you who aren't familiar with the Overholser Mansion, we have this beautiful turret, you know, that's on the corner. It's really quite the striking feature of the home. And the third floor offers you the most view from there. Yeah. So you can look out and imagine what it was like over 100 years ago. And we've been told that that was kind of a favorite place for the Overholsers. So they would open the windows and they could read and relax and have a nice breeze. So we have individuals tell us, you know, I'm up there and the tour's moved on and somebody will say, go, you know, or stop. I know during some of the other tours, ghost hunting tours, I've been told that objects have been removed from people's hands and thrown. Which was kind of odd because the ghosts, you know, that we necessarily, you know, are accustomed to don't necessarily do those things. Yeah. But there were some dolls that were loaned, you know, to the mansion. So we thought maybe their spirit was kind of doing some things. Yeah, they didn't like it.
Fantastic.
Yeah, that was really good.
Yeah. And if you've never been, it's an absolute amazing, it's a gem.
Thank you.
Tell, how can the public visit and what are other visiting hours?
We're open for guided tours Tuesday through Saturday. And that's one of the unique things about the mansion. We just don't leave it open and where people can go. We want them to experience it. So the Carriage House has a lot of background history on early Oklahoma City, as well as the Overholser family. And then we provide guided tours that walk them through the home. So it's a really personal experience. We offer it 5 times a day. So Tuesday through Saturday, 10, 11, 12, 1. And our final tour is at 2 o'clock. Tours last about 45 minutes to an hour. We do have special events that we like to offer throughout the year because it was a home for events. This month, we're offering ghost hunting tours, like I mentioned. Our very first one is this Saturday, October the 14th. It's $40. You get hands-on training equipment. How can you use these materials? It lasts about 4 hours. And then we offer next Thursday and Saturday, called Scary Tales. And it's really an opportunity to tour the home at night and then hear some of those stories I just shared with your listeners earlier from our museum coordinator, Lisa, who has actually been associated with the house for well over 25 years. One of the things that we're starting to do this year, and we're really excited about it, it's called a designer holiday. We are working with several interior design firms here in Oklahoma City, and they're coming in and they're putting their own style on the mansion and decorating it for the holiday. So we might have some modern looks, some traditional, some contemporary. So it's always a great way to get people to come and visit the mansion.
Was that? I've only
just
got
keep
one.
Keep trying.
I've only got.
Keep trying.
Wait, I look. I don't know if you have seen pictures of me, folks, but I look like Nosferatu. So
a little bit, a cross between Nosferatu and a werewolf.
And a werewolf. Yeah. Well, I've got a beard going on right now. So let's talk to Tanya about actual. This is fascinating to me. She's an actual paranormal investigator. So we'll get her take on the mansion and the goings on that she's experienced there, and hear a little bit about what paranormal investigation is. Okay, we're here with Tanya McCoy, the founder of the Oklahoma Paranormal Association, to talk about the Overholser Mansion. So when did you get involved in the paranormal investigation?
Started out with professional teams almost 10 years ago. Before that, I always just kind of researched because I've started seeing apparitions at the early age of 6 and kind of always been interested. So it goes with a lot of research, of course, and being an author, that's one of the things you do. And then investigations, it just took us a step further.
What kinds of things do you do? I mean, what does the group do as a whole?
For Oklahoma Paranormal Association, the OPA, our number one thing is teaching. So we like to teach people how to actually go out and do investigations, how to train them, what equipment to use, and how to do one actually properly. The main thing you're seeing nowadays with paranormal investigations are these overnight groups that form, which are fine, but then they don't go properly to places to investigate. They'll break and enter, they'll trespass, which is all a huge, of course, no-no, gives us a black eye. So we're trying to teach people how to go about obtaining permission to go to sites before they go, as well as how to actually run the investigation. And with us, we can actually let people join us on an investigation in a certified as can be, haunted location. And they get to use our equipment. They get the experience without doing anything illegally. It's still research at this point. You know, there's the old saying, practicing medicine in the field, because there's nothing that's ever really concrete. You're still having to learn. We're still in the baby steps of paranormal, even though it has been researched for the past 100 or so years, especially with the big push with Ed and Lorraine Warren, who really kind of jump-started the majority of this for us. It's still theory-based. There's no way of fully knowing until we're on the other side anyway. So there's theories that we test. There's different equipment we use that we test. And we're looking for that consistency of, is this really happening? Why it's happening? Is it a possible reaction to electronic fields or static electricity? Any of that. It's all still a theory.
What was your first investigation in Oklahoma where you were like, wow, we've got something here?
One of the first ones that I did here in Oklahoma, which I've always kind of done smaller investigations with friends when we started becoming more of a forum team, was at the old community theater I was with in UConn, the stage door. And we used to get a lot of activity there. We'd have experiences as, you know, some of the actors. But then when we'd actually go in with our equipment at night, we'd have more reactions, more responses, photographs, EVPs. So that, I mean, the minute I walked in the building to even start with that community group, I was already going, wow, this place is haunted. You just have that feeling. So
let's talk about the Overholser. What's your first experience with the Overholser Mansion?
I was drawn to the building while doing research, and I decided I would go up and do one of their history tours just to kind of go through and get a feel of the building. And of course, back then they were like, oh, we don't talk about the paranormal. That was on their page, da 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 da. And I pull up and I automatically see the woman in the window.
Oh, wow.
So daytime, yeah, I can still see different things. So that was kind of oh, there's someone in the window there. And when I got in and started speaking to Lisa, come to find out it was Miss O, who actually stands in the turret window. So we did a walkthrough through the house. She and I talked a little afterwards, and I said, look, this is who I am. This is what I do. And then she and I talked more, and she invited us to come in and do an investigation. It's kind of been there ever since.
Is it just the one entity that you feel, or are there multiple?
No, there's multiple in the Overholser. Miss O is definitely there. She responds a lot with us, and she'll let you know when she's not happy. They're not real happy right now with the water damage. Her and Mr. O both spoke out this last weekend about that. There's an app that we use. It works kind of like the Ovilus. And the Ovilus uses different energy levels in the air and attaches it to a word so they can speak directly through. And we were asking questions with them this last weekend, and they were letting us know about the water damage.
Wow.
They were literally saying leak. They were saying water. Fixed in time. I mean, it was specific things. So yeah, they're there. A couple of the workers are there. We definitely know that there's some out in the carriage house as well. And this last weekend, we actually picked up on some entities that were not normally there. We think they're coming from a house nearby that is currently getting renovated. And sometimes when that happens, it stirs up activity. And
so are they visiting ghosts?
They are. They're called transients, actually. There's an actual word for it. And that's they're coming over, ones that have never been there before that we don't recognize. And you recognize the energy when you've been around them enough. You can tell who's around. It's just like if you're around friends, you just pick up on it.
So usually, like growing up or reading books and things like that, it always seems like these beings are attached to some like tragic or horrible story, but that's not necessarily so, is it? That it doesn't have to necessarily.
No, there's lots of different reasons why they can stick around. Some can be attached to objects. You could also have what's called photographic haunting, which is where they're not actually there, but their energy is imprinted on that time or place. The intelligent haunting, which we do have at the Overholser, or where they actually interact with you. They'll sit there and tell you, you know, Lisa brought in a thing of flowers one time that Miss O did not like, and she opened up all the cabinet doors in the pantry, in the butler's pantry, just out of the blue. We were filming last year with one of the news crews, and me and three of my investigators were in there, And we heard someone walking in the hall, hearing like the clicking of heels. And they kind of looked and I go, oh, that's just Lisa. She was saying she was coming back over. And then afterwards we found out it wasn't Lisa. Nobody was in the house. And then I realized it was the clicking of heels and Lisa doesn't wear heels. So it was Miss O checking out what was going on in her kitchen. So they often check in on us like that.
So what would you say, what is the most haunted place in Oklahoma that you've experienced?
We get asked that a lot. That's really hard to nail down simply because there are so many locations in Oklahoma and activity depends on what time of day it is, what the temperature is, what the moon phase is, who's with you at that time, what emotional things are going on. All of that varies. So one place might be just hopping one night and dead the next, no pun intended. And then another one can be really slow, and then all of a sudden, things are going crazy. Mustang Historical Society, we go there a lot, we're members there, and it's the same way. Sometimes it can be just so slow, and the other times we're getting full-body apparitions, we're getting flying orbs that we can see with our eyes, equipment's going off like crazy, people are getting pushed, people are getting pinched. So there's no way of telling.
Is there one instance that you could say that was the most either fantastic or that you were the most scared?
In a building itself,
mm-hmm.
There's a couple of times. There is one that happened at the Mustang that we had to get kind of easy with. There was like a really bad vibe in that one time. And then there was another time down in Medicine Park. The old plantation, we investigate there quite a bit. And I'd never felt uneasy in that building, but there was one night I literally backed out of the building with my back towards the door. I wouldn't put my back towards the area. Like I said, it just varies. It really does. It varies.
Well, when people come to the Overholster on the 28th, mm-hmm. What can they expect?
Well, that depends on the spirits. We can't make them act on demand. Our number one rule is we don't provoke. We respect the dead just like we should respect the living. So we're not going to go out and start yelling at them and demanding they perform. They usually do still show us something. I can tell you this last weekend, we had a lot of interaction. We actually had a large group that witnessed a full body shadow apparition. We had equipment going off. We had, I'm not quite sure about the EVP stuff yet, but we did have equipment. We had that. We had things getting moved, doors opening, different little things like that did occur. So,
and EVP stands for electronic voice.
Electronic voice phenomenon. And that's where they're actually talking to you, but you can't hear it with your ear, but you play it back and then you can actually hear the voices.
What time are the tours this next weekend?
The 28th, we're going to be starting at 7 p.m. The first little part, we kind of meet in the carriage house. We go over the rules and regs because we do have rules and regulations. And then about 7:30, 8 o'clock, we're going to start the tour. And that usually goes to about midnight.
Great. And it goes to a great cause. It's one of the annual fundraisers for the Preservation Oklahoma.
It is, yes. Everything goes 100% back to them.
So tell us a little bit more about your organization. I saw on your Facebook page that you also have a Bigfoot investigator and a outside of paranormal activity? Are there UFO researchers and things?
We do have contacts with certain groups like that. The Paracon that is coming up in November will be featuring not only the ghost side of paranormal, but UFO and Bigfoot. And that's our first year we're offering all three. Normally we just kind of focus on the ghost because that's what we do, but we decided we wanted to extend out and offer other teachings for other people that are intrigued with the other part of paranormal.
Thank you so much for being here and maybe we'll make it out.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I hope so. You need to make it to Paracon and meet John Sappas.
Okay.
What day is Paracon?
Paracon is going to be November 17th and 18th. We're also doing investigations at the Overholser for there as well. Mm-hmm. We're getting our guests get to go on the downtown ghost walk with Jeff Provine, who's my co-author of Haunted Oklahoma City. There will also be a gallery reading and then the full day of conference where they'll actually get to learn about all the different aspects, the different tools. They'll be selling paranormal equipment by the creator of Paranologies who did the Periscope, which I was talking about earlier. And they'll also get to meet John Sappas. John Sappas is with Destination America. He's called the Haunted Collector. He's on their show. He's also the nephew of Ed and Lorraine Warren, who's kind of our huge founders for paranormal who have the Annabelle doll.
It's, oh, wow.
Yeah. John will be there. He's a renowned demonologist known throughout the U.S., top in his field. So it'll be an amazing weekend.
Is that going to be here in Oklahoma City?
It is. It'll be downtown Oklahoma City in the Sheraton Hotel.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
I think we got it.
So are you spooked?
I'm spooked. I'm ready. I'm going to watch some scary movies.
Yes.
Actually, the best, there's only one truly scary movie.
And what would that be?
That's The Shining.
Yeah, Shining is pretty.
Time in, time out. Yeah. Scares the pants off me every time. It's psychological. Yeah. It's got a ghosty element to it.
I like the classics. I like even further back, though. I am a huge Hammer films fan. So that's.
Do those actually spook you? Has there been a movie that's actually like
The Shining? The Shining is scary. Psycho. When I first saw it, I was probably a little too young.
Ooh, yeah, that is a good one.
Really scared the bejeebas out of me. Those two really.
Do you remember a movie called Lady in White? It was like a ghost story.
I don't. I didn't see that one.
I like more supernatural.
Yeah, like ghost stuff.
Like ghosty, spooky stuff. It's more about what you don't see sometimes.
Yeah. I like the cheesy vampire and mummy movies with the pretty girls, the whole 60s vibe going on, or the like the old Italian horrors.
Ooh, yeah. They're remaking Suspiria coming up.
Yeah.
That's it for this week. In 2 weeks, we've got a cowboy theme episode in the Chisholm Trail.
Right. So giddy up, cowboy.
We'll see you next time. Have a fun and safe Halloween, everybody. Goodbye.
I like how you have to do the hand things when you do it.